Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 27 of season 12 of the Brett Minute the Daily Podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 film The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Bubba Wade from It's Time to Rewind. Welcome back once again, Bubba.
Absolutely. Good to be here.
Yes. Thank you for coming back and joining us. Especially when we're talking about little rock hammers and 6.7s and who knows what we're going to end up talking about today. you never know where this podcast will jump to.
I'm ready for my geology lesson.
If only I knew anything about geology, that would possibly help. But you know that's what the internet is for. You know, nothing else you can do about that. Mm-hmm. Minute 27 begins with Andy continuing to describe the rock hammer, and ends with Red giving Andy a free lesson. As I said, we ended things yesterday with Andy beginning to describe what a rock hammer is and why it's not lethal. Which again, I think we're going to debate that issue both now and you know, like we did yesterday about the toothbrush. I believe that a rock hammer could be used as a lethal weapon, but you know, hey,
yeah, definitely in prison.
Yeah, but if no one you know thinks that, then okay. You know, who am I to you know, to argue with the fact that they don't do it? I don't know. Andy started describing the whole thing, and he says it's about 6 or 7 inches long, and it looks like a miniature pickaxe. So, I mean, that's definitely the best way to convince someone that this is not a lethal object, you know, but you're saying, yeah, it's just a small pickaxe. You know, come on, who would use a pickaxe in a lethal way? Would you, Bubba?
No, of course not.
Okay, and I believe you.
It also calls to mind, like, you know, the chain gang style of, you know, prison, you know, breaking rocks with pickaxes.
That's right. And those weren't lethal weapons. So I guess that's sort of, you know, that maybe that's what they're going on. That, you know, no one ever tried, you know, using one of those axes in chain gang to escape. So, or on one of their fellow inmates. Or prisoners, however you want to call it. So I guess, you know, it must be something that isn't lethal at all. Again, it's just, I love the conversation between the two of them, but this is just a little unbelievable, the type of things that they're both saying here and believing at the same time. And then Red gets to him, pickaxe? And he goes, for rocks. And Red goes, oh, rocks. And then Andy, you know, tosses a rock at him. And I give Red a lot of credit because, you know, he looks at it and goes, quartz. Now, if someone were to throw me a rock, I would just say, oh, a rock. I wouldn't even think to try and figure out what type of rock it is.
Yeah, I think that one line does a lot of heavy lifting to show the audience what type of character Red is. You know, he's not just some ignorant you know, inmate. You know, this is someone who has at least some education to him.
Right. Correct. At least the geology education.
Yeah.
And then Andy looks at him and goes, yeah, quartz. And he bends down and starts, like, fishing through the gravel on the ground and goes, and some mica, shale, limestone. And Red just looks at him and goes, so? And he goes, so I'm a rock hound. At least I was in my old life. I like to be again on a limited basis. So again, I'm not going to get too much into the various rocks and minerals that they talk about here because I really, really don't. I'm far from being an expert on these type of things. I know practically nothing about it. Because like I said, if someone were to throw me a quartz rock, I would look at it and go, hey, here's a rock. That's about it.
Now, one of the few things that I know is, and like, it's the difference between the different types of gemstones is like quartz is a type of gem that it grows in crystalline formations, but if you like try to break it, like if you try to turn it into a gemstone, it doesn't cleave into sharp lines. Where a diamond, it grows, it looks like a rock, but then whenever you cut it, it cuts in nice sharp lines, and that's why diamonds can be created into, you know, these beautiful gemstones, but you don't get that with quartz. But quartz naturally grows in a more crystalline
So in other
formation.
words, you can take like one of the pieces of quartz and throw it up to the North Pole, and it will create like a some type of fortress of solitude.
Something like that.
It just builds. It
But
builds and stays in the same shape.
yeah, it naturally forms in a crystalline structure, but if you try and, you know, make it into its own crystal shape, you're going to just get a bunch of like you know, rock. It's not going to cut smoothly. It's going to have a bunch of rough
Right.
edges.
Okay. That makes sense. Again, I don't know enough about these things, so I'm really not going to try to try to even explain any of it. I mean, in the 1930s, they started trying to use it on electronics when they were first starting to use electronics. And the problem was is that the most suitable crystals were from Brazil. But because once World War II broke out, it was very difficult to get to Brazil and get stuff from Brazil. So they started synthesizing it for the whole thing, and they then tried growing large quartz crystals, and in the end, the U.S. Army was able to do it. Together with the Bell Laboratories, and they were able to, synthesize crystals that were about 1.5 inches in diameter, which was the largest they had at the time. I guess that's maybe why, because you have the quartz watch. So the quartz clock is a familiar device using the mineral. It's simply a clock that uses a quartz oscillator as its time reference, and the idea is that it uses accurate measurements for that type of thing. So that's also very cool that they use that for that. Then he mentions mica. Do you know anything about the mineral of mica?
I know it's also well, I'm not sure if it's the same or it's just a similar one. A lot of people know it as formica, and it's typically grows in like sheets, like very thin sheets, and a lot of times it was used for like countertops.
That is true. It's so sheet mica is a versatile and durable material widely used in electronic and thermal insulation, and it has electrical properties, heat resistance, and chemical stability. And like you said, it's quite often used as countertops and things like that because of the fact that it's harder to damage it, I guess you can say, from that perspective. The there are also versions of it that are like crumbs, which is why it's called mica, because it's the Latin word mica means crumb. That's why it's so there's a lot of places that use mica powder and mica sheavings, shavings, I guess that's the right word. But the mica dust is regarded as is a hazardous substance, and can cause respiratory problems if you have too much of an exposure to it. So there's a they have a legal limit in the U.S. as to how much mica you can have in your workplace, which is 20 million parts per cubic foot that you're allowed to be around over an 8-hour workday. Which I have absolutely no idea what that really what that means. The book Moby Dick, it does mention mica, and it's something that Melville compares the whale skin, the appearance of mica. In the Oklahoma song, in the Oklahoma play, movie, the song, The Surrey with a Fringe on Top, is describes Surrey as having a icing glass curtains you can roll right down. And basically, mica is used for that. It's commonly used as you know, when you make windows on cars. What else? Where else is it mentioned? Mark Twain's book, The Gilded Age, he described a furnace door which was framed from a small square of ice and glass. And the book series of Little House on the Prairie also mentions it. A tall, shiny heater with ice and glass windows stood at its center. The chairs around the wall were all polished woods. So, you know, it's something that has been used for quite a long time.
Yeah.
So then we move on to shale. So, what do you know about shale?
That one, I'm not, I don't know with enough certainty to say what I know about shale. I know it's a rock.
Okay, that's pretty much what I know about it also, except that you do find it often in water. You know, it's something that can withstand water for quite a long time. Anyone out there who knows more about rocks, just ignore everything that I'm saying, you know. So there are three types of rocks that before the mid-19th century, they weren't able to differentiate between them. You have slate, shale, and schist. When they would mine underground in the coal mines, they would refer to shale as slate. And you also had what's known as black shale, which they would find while they were digging for coal, and they would call them, that would be known as black metal. So that's what I got about shale. And then the final one that he mentions is limestone. So, you have anything you want to say about limestone?
I know that's a softer stone. That's you know, it's kind of like built with calcium buildup.
Okay, that's true. And it also is formed with a lot of marine fragments. You know, from coral reefs and things like that. Basically, you find a lot of limestone that's been embedded into mud. It says here carbonate mud, but I thought carbonate was only something that's your own best specimen. I don't know. Maybe there really is something that you know, use carbonate and attempt to try to free someone in carbonate. I don't know. No clue whatsoever. But again, it's just another type of rock that Andy Dufresne will walk around picking up. What percentage of all sedimentary rock do you think is limestone?
I have no idea. I feel like it would be a high percentage.
It's about 25%. I don't know if that's considered a high percentage or not, but you know, it depends if it, the question is whether it's the largest concentrate of everything. You know, if that's 25%, but all the rest are, you know, maximum of 20%, then, you know, it's the largest amount. You know, that type of thing. The Rock of Gibraltar is made from limestone. The Florida Keys are composed mainly of limestone. It's used quite often in construction, agriculture, and industrial materials. And obviously, it's very common in architecture, especially in Europe and North America. The Great Pyramid in of Giza was is also made of limestone. There's a town in Canada called Kingston, Ontario, which is known as the Limestone City because most of the buildings that are built there were constructed from limestone. The Mayans used it quite often in the buildings that they made.
Mm-hmm.
And because limestone is something that's it's raw material that's always in high demand, it's not always easy to find. It's a little more difficult than it used to be. There's never really been a shortage, but there's always been a concern because the demand for it constantly is increasing. Even today, obviously, people still use limestone for many type of things. They do that. Limestone itself is not considered a hazardous material. And it's even some of the particles of limestone is actually put in. It's a food additive. But because limestone itself has minute amounts of silica, so it's sometimes believed that it could also cause cancer if you have too much of it. Now, I have no idea what food has. Has limestone in it. That's like that to me is just a little crazy that you would put that in food.
I believe it was a favorite of the rock biter.
Okay,
from the Never Ending Story.
But I don't think he's really concerned about getting
gourmet rocks. Those rocks.
I would think. I could be wrong. Like you know, it is possible. And Andy's response to him is, "So I'm a rock hound. At least I was in the old life. I'd like to be again on a limited basis." So, do you know what a rock hound is?
I mean, I'm mad. You know, just based on context clues, it's someone that
enjoys rocks. It's basically an amateur enthusiast who searches for, collects, and studies rocks, minerals, and fossils. It's often described as nature's greatest treasure hunt because people have to hike and explore and they get the thrill of discovering unique geological specimens. So I guess Andy Dufresne is considered one of those. Now, it's funny, they have a list here of what essential gear a rock hound needs with him. And number one on the list is a rock hammer in order to keep Boggs and the sisters away by using non-lethal methods. Yeah. you also need to have safety glasses, a hand lens, a sturdy bag or a bucket, and make sure you bring a lot of water and sunscreen. So, yeah, that's basically the explanation of being a rock hound. And Red just looks at him and goes, or maybe you want to hammer somebody's skull. And Andy looks at him again in a very sincere look and goes, "No, sir. I have no enemies here." And Red chuckles a little bit and goes, "No? Wait a while. Because word gets around. Sisters have taken quite a liking to you." And, you know, as he mentions them, we get a shot of the sisters. We see Boggs basically staring at them. And then Red continues and goes, "Especially Boggs." And he goes, "I don't suppose it would help any if I explained to them I'm not homosexual." And Red looks at him and goes, "Neither are they. You have to be human first. They don't qualify." And at this point, it's very interesting because throughout this entire conversation that he's having with Andy, he's still throwing the ball. He's still having his catch. He motions to Hayward to stop, and then he like crouches down along with Andy, who's still crouched down looking through the rocks on the ground, and basically starts saying to him, he goes, "Bull queers," and then he gets cut off. So is there anything else you wanted to mention about this particular minute?
Well, one other thing that I read in the IMDb trivia was that this was shot, like this was a full day shoot of them filming this scene. And Morgan Freeman was playing catch the entire time without any complaints. But then the next day he came in with his arm in a sling from throwing the ball all day
That
for
could be a
nine
problem.
hours.
Completely understandable. Okay, so today's segment is called Talking Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five movies that are narrated.
All right, I've got let's see, I've got six here on my list. I think I will give my honorable mention to Stand By Me. That's, since it was my number one yesterday, it famously has that ending narration that's, such a great capper to it. I will put my five as 500 Days of Summer. I think that's a, yeah, it's a pretty great movie. And even though the main character isn't exactly the most likable, I think that the film itself is very well done and enjoyable. My number four, I'll go with Emily. That's a movie that I really need to revisit. I absolutely fell in love with that movie whenever I first watched it, and I bought it on DVD. And I haven't watched it in over 20 years. I still own it, but I really need to give that another go around. But that's such a whimsical and lovely, lovely movie. And then my number three, I will go with The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. This is a childhood favorite, and I actually have seen this one, a handful of times. I've of course introduced both my daughters to it as they were growing up, and that's the 70s version where they collected all the various shorts, and I just love the narrator being a character and the book itself being a character in the story, and I love like the meta elements that they use involving the book and the narrator, being an actual character in the story. It's so such a fun time. And then my number two, I will go with Fight Club, which, the main character, Edward Norton, he's typically referred to as either Jack or as the narrator. I spent 139 episodes talking about that movie. So I definitely, that's a favorite of mine. And then my number one is, another movie that I've spent a lot of time talking about, although it was only 45 episodes, is Memento. That's so much of that movie is narration. We're inside Leonard's head, and we're getting his internal monologue as the narrator of the story,
Very
and
unreliable.
as an unreliable narrator on top of that. And that, yeah, and that is, that is an all-time
Well,
top
you don't
movie for
spend
me.
45 episodes talking about a movie that you generally don't talk about, a movie that for 45 episodes that you don't like. Generally not.
Yeah.
I've come close, but it was because I had to finish the series. That's my excuse. All right, excellent. So now we will play the first of two daily games. We're going to start today with High Low. The 1961 film The Hustler with Paul Newman and
The
Jackie Brown.
Hustler. I will go with 8.0 on IMDb. Actually, I'll drop that a little bit. 7.8. And Rotten Tomatoes, I think that one's going to be a little bit higher. I'll say
Sometimes
85.
you just really got to go with your gut. That's all I can say. Because the IMDb rating is 8.0. But Rotten Tomatoes is 96%.
I can see that.
All right, let's spin the wheel for your next one. Right. The 2017 film, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Right.
Missouri. I know. Yeah, I remember that one being kind of a critical darling. I'm going to say IMDb. It's also one of those where I feel like it had a overall smaller audience. So that always makes it harder to gauge. I'm going to say 7.1 on IMDb and 87% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, you undershot both of those this time. IMDb is 8.1 and it has a 90% on. I've always really liked that movie. I thought it was a great story. I like the way it's told. All right, let's spin the wheel for the last one today. Okay, the 1953 film Roman Holiday.
This is one of those where I know it's a big classic that I feel like everyone who talks about it loves it. So I'll say IMDb is going to be 8.6 and Rotten Tomatoes, I'll go with 95.
Okay. Again, both of those the IMDb is 8, so you went a little high on that one, and the Rotten Tomatoes is 97. So you were close with the 95. You knew that it would be high up there. Yeah,
not too bad.
Sure. the point of this is obviously not to get exact. It's to get a gauge as to what's going on. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
All right. So now we will play the other daily game of Name That Book Adaptation. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. Okay, this book was made into the 1938 and made into a movie in 1938, and the original book was called The Wheel Spins.
The Wheel Spins. I don't have any ideas on this one.
Okay, it is a movie that was directed by Alfred Hitchcock.
It's Hitchcock. 38. Would that be Vertigo?
No, Vertigo's in the 50s.
Oh, yeah. Anything pre 1960 is all a blur for me.
That's fine. It's understandable.
So one of his earlier, I'm not super familiar with early Hitchcock either.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the answer is The Lady Vanishes.
Oh yeah, I have heard of that, but yeah, I don't think I would have pulled it.
Okay, makes sense. All right, so Bubba, would you like to tell everyone where they can find you?
Sure. Today I will talk about, my currently longest running podcast, which is It's Time to Rewind, where I take a time loop story and break it down one loop at a time. I typically alternate between movies and TV episodes. Now, I've covered Groundhog Day, Twilight Zone, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Memento. And then I am... early into my eighth season, my eighth season, which I'm calling Times 12, and I'm going through a bunch of time loop related material with 12 in the title. I'm kicking things off with 12 episodes about a video game called 12 Minutes, which has been a really interesting video game. I've been playing through that with Jason Soto. In just a few weeks, I'm going to be switching into the 12 Monkeys portion of my season, where every Tuesday I am going to be talking about the movie 12 Monkeys with a different guest every week for 12 weeks. And every Thursday, I'm going to be going through the 12 Monkeys TV season. the TV series, doing roughly half a season per episode. And then I'm gonna, spend a bit more time focusing on the one actual time loop episode in from season two called Lullaby. And then my idea is I've got, three Christmas movies, which I'm attempting to do 12 episodes each on, combining them. There's the 12 Dates of Christmas and the 12 Days of Christmas Eve. And then I will be finishing up the season with the movie, which was also a short film and a short story called 1201. So a lot of 12s, time loop stories, and that should be interesting.
Is 1201 with the one with Timothy Hutton?
I don't I know Jonathan
Timothy,
Silverman
no. Okay, no,
is
it's
like
okay.
the
No,
main.
I confused the two. Okay, it's Jonathan Silverman, right?
And I believe Kurtwood Smith is in the short film.
Ah, interesting. I've never seen the short film. I've seen the full movie. Ah, I know what I'm thinking. I was
Yeah,
thinking of
right now
Five Minutes to
I'm
Midnight. I think that's the one with him. Ah, 12 minutes.
I'm currently 3 weeks into recording about the movie 12 Monkeys, and that has been such a great film to dive into. And I have the spoiler alert, kind of the entire movie is basically like one iteration of a time loop, because it we see the ending at the beginning, and the main character is kind of looped into his own timeline. But that's been fun so far, and I could definitely spend 12 episodes talking about the entire movie
Right.
with different people, and not cover the same ground
That
every time either.
that's the point, isn't it? What we all attempt to
Yeah.
do. Right. So I was talking about 5 Days to Midnight. That's the one with Timothy Hutton. And 1201 is with Jonathan Silverman and Helen Slater.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I haven't, like, I haven't done a ton of research into that movie just yet. I'm, kind of saving. I just know it's a TV movie that stars Jonathan Silverman, and it involves a time loop. That's at this point in the season, that's the beginning and ending of my knowledge, and the fact that there's a short film and short story.
Interesting. I'll have to try and look for that. All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Midnight. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So until tomorrow, get busy living.
Or get busy dying.